This is SaaS Scaled, the podcast where data meets action, with host Armon Shrocki. Each week, Armon will be sitting down with CEOs and industry leaders from the technology sector, giving you the insight to innovate without reinventing the wheel. They'll discuss challenges, best practices, and how to identify the right metrics. So if you want to get to market faster and in a way that matters, then subscribe and join us every week as we discuss SaaS Scale. This episode is brought to you by Curvey, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.
Welcome to another episode of SaaS Scaled, and I'm pleased to have Setyon with us today. And could you please introduce yourself, tell us about yourself, your company, Setyon, and then you're going to have a fantastic discussion for the next 30, 40 minutes.
Well, thank you for having me. My name is Setyon Singhani. I'm the founder and CEO at Alation. Alation is a data intelligence platform, and what we do is we help large enterprises, over 600 companies, and 40% of the Fortune 100, effectively better manage and understand the data that they have available to them. And so there's so much data that most of these companies have. It's strewn all over the place, across multiple clouds, across multiple business application systems, across multiple warehouses, in multiple formats. And that complexity is really hard to navigate, but for a system like Alation that helps you describe your data and understand it and use it at scale.
Fantastic. And then I have plenty of questions, of course, for you, but let's start with the main topic that is really about the impact of AI in data management and about really the way people look at their data and data that most organizations are going to have more and more in the future, how the AI is going to help them with that. Of course, you are at the center of that kind of topic by, you know, helping a lot of organizations. I know that many of these large organizations are your customers, a good percentage of, you know, I think I heard from you some statistics that are very impressive, and I will let you expand upon that. But how do you see that? How do you see really the AI playing a role in data management as we are today and as we go into the future?
Yeah. Data is this form of content where you have all of this information strewn across all of these systems. And unlike most of the content that we consume, it's not self-describing. When you watch a video, you understand what the video is about. When you read an article, you understand what that article is about because it literally tells you in English. But data comes out of these systems, and often these systems, and I'm here talking about structured and semi-structured data, are capturing information that some program developed a data model for. And so you don't really know what this stuff is. And it can be categorized in a variety of different ways and described in a variety of different ways. Now, the thing about this data, you know, description and organization idea that is effectively data management, like how do I organize this information? How do I understand it? How do I access it? That's work that people don't really enjoy doing. You know, people don't want to walk around and describe a data set as their primary job for the day. That's not something that companies wake up doing. No company has as its stated goal to describe all of the data that we have internally to available to us. But of course, without the description of the data, without the information, you can't really do anything with the data. And so the very obvious thing that AI is going to do for data management is to make the cost of describing all of this information significantly lower, because you're not going to have as many humans using this information. You're not going to have as many people who are trying to describe this data. It's going to be more automated than it otherwise might have been. On the flip side, what you will see is that there's some interesting impacts that I think are not expected. So, you know, the expected thing is we're going to have all this data. It's going to be described at scale. But I think there's some unexpected impacts in terms of how much budget gets allocated to many of these data management initiatives, what the shape of the industry looks like, and what problems people are working on. And I think those are actually the second order impacts, I think, are probably more interesting than the first order impacts.
And from data itself, from data perspective, have you seen during the course of, you know, time that you are doing this, working with these organizations, that the type of data that you mentioned, for example, some data structure, some smart structure, have you seen that data is changing as well as, you know, we are going to the cloud age, for example, as people have more data sources, as people collect more data, as social media is becoming a source of data for many aspects, including marketing and some other aspects. Of course, you know, if you go back decades ago, probably most of the data that companies were processing, storing, managing was rows and columns, very structured data. Have you seen a change? Is it going to change even further in the future? How do you see data types and data structures are going to change or have been changing?
Yeah, I think the biggest, so if you think about the world and you think about, just take an image as an example. Historically, the way we've been able to understand information inside of an image is by structuring it. So we might see, for example, an image of a whole bunch of people on a soccer pitch, and those players are in different positions, and you would have an ML engineer basically say, oh, this is what offsides look like. So I'm going to now label every player on this field, and I'm going to label so many different images. So now I've got this library of what offsides looks like. I'm going to feed that into an ML model, and then I'm going to feed that into some prediction or some categorization or some outcome. So essentially, you're moving from unstructured to structured in order to be able to process that information at scale. The world of sort of generative AI and these large language models has presented an alternative mechanism for processing the information. You basically now just are able to directly feed these models with all this information. And by interacting with them, you're able to get answers outside of it with all of this without any of these structuring steps in the middle, which is pretty cool. But the difference is that in this process, there's a lot of guessing. The models themselves are fundamentally stochastic. They're fundamentally random. And so you can give some input and you will get some output, and the output may not always be the same depending on the way in which you've asked the input or which model you're using or what structured data you're inputting. And so there's this new type of processing. So I don't think the data is very different, but our ability to sort of process that information and the way in which we process that difference is information is so different. And that's what I think is so exciting, because you've got this stochastic way of like analyzing information, which is very context sensitive, as opposed to this highly deterministic and structured way that is, you know, very much sort of how we think about science. And you've got now these two worlds of human-like processing with machine-like processing and structured processing coming together. And that's really, I think, cool. So the data is the same, but how we think about using this data is very different.
Makes sense. And getting into this, so essentially what you say is, even we have better ways maybe to extract data that we didn't have before. So AI can help us to extract data from video, maybe from PDF, from other sources. But at the end, when we extract the data, we structure it, then at the end, it's the same data type that we could have in the past as well. And then we are there. And of course, the quality of the data can help us to get smarter on the AI. So we are getting a better kind of AI when we are, you know, dealing with quality data.
Quality matters in both cases, right? Because if you have bad quality, you know, bad quality images, images that might not be correct or maybe misleading, or if you have text files where there are stated facts that are absolutely wrong, then the model in both the structured and the unstructured world are going to give you a bad output. So quality matters in each of these cases, but I think it perhaps matters far more in the case of the LLM-based world. In the generative world, because there's no human intermediation. In the structured world, you could say, well, this is bad data and this is good data, and you could train it, even though that's methodical and slow. It's something you could do. Obviously, you can curate what goes into an LLM, but if you're feeding it objectively bad data, it is really hard to correct that information, and you have no idea what the outputs are going to be corresponding to those inputs.
Sure. If imaginary question. If you have an organization that you know, has a lot of data, good size organization, collecting a lot of data, now how does it look like life without a lesion versus having a lesion, right? So if you go to two scenarios, one is I don't use this tool and any similar technology, I don't have a lesion, versus yes, I'm using a lesion. How do you see, how do you compare, you know, approach A with approach B at that time and the future for that organization?
Yeah, it's a little bit like having a corp. It's like a little bit like having a company where there is no corporate internet or search tool or sharing capability. Or, you know, maybe if you take it into the academic setting, it's like going to a library where there's no computer to search through what books are existing or are available. What would you do? You would probably go to the librarian's desk, or you would go to somebody who might be an expert in a department, and you'd say to them, well, hey, Armin, I know you know a lot about sort of entrepreneurship and podcasting. Like, can you tell me the best two or three books about this particular topic? And I'm, you know, particularly interested in the history of podcasting. And you may or may not know about what is inside of that library. And you might be able to point the person in a general direction that's correct, or might not. And the result of that is it's a really painstaking and hard process to go find information that's correct. And often you're going to find information that's incorrect and rely upon it as correct. And it's going to take you many iterations in order to be able to get to the answer. Now, during that period, you might get exhausted. You might just say, oh my God, it takes so long to find this information. I might just make a decision without having it because I just don't have the time. Or maybe you take weeks and months to do something that would have otherwise taken you seconds. And so essentially it's about time to information. And what people before they have a lesion would do is ask a friend. They would just go say, hey, what is it that is out there that I can go find? And that might yield some good results, but it might often not. And at scale, it becomes more and more confusing as these complex, as the complexity of these organizations increase, as is true for most Global 2000 companies. But with Alation, you're able to find information much more quickly. And so there's some fun case studies. I mean, one of the case studies that we often talk about are, you know, one of the earliest customers of Alation was Safeway, which is a large grocer. And in their case, they were just going through a merger with Albertsons, and they had an application called a Big Book of Coupons, which, you know, would approximate what you might get in the mail. Like every, you know, we all get mail and we all get these flyers, you know, telling us about what meat might be on sale this weekend. And in their case, they had this this iPhone-based application that allowed them to serve the coupons intelligently based upon what that person's buying patterns might be. And interestingly, Albertsons, a little bit more at the time, obviously not today, but at the time, was more oriented towards print media than they were towards the digital media aspect. And our user leveraged the information that they were able to find in catalog to basically discover the validity rates of the coupons that they were serving relative to the print counterparts, and therefore prove the existence of that program as one that was much more high ROI than the one that was in the print capability. And they were able to save their budget as a consequence of that. We have other examples where people are able to, you know, produce different different products because they were able to find information that they were able to discover in the catalog. So some really cool use cases, and all because knowledge sharing was much more easy and efficient.
When it comes to data and analytics, as you know better than anybody, accuracy is a big deal. So, for example, we cannot offer, you know, analytics to someone, to some organizations, and say 98% of the data and the answers I'm providing are accurate, and I don't know which 2% are inaccurate. Some of the concerns that people really have when it comes to AI, especially Gen AI, is that sometimes, you know, there might be some inaccuracy in some cases. And how do you really see that it can be prevented? Maybe it's not applicable the way you guys use, you know, Gen AI, or it can be minimized, it can be eliminated. Can you expand upon that? How do you see that playing a role now and in the future?
Yeah, so I think if you use ChatGPT or any of these reasonably sophisticated models, you would know that often the responses are quite generic, sometimes those responses are incorrect or misleading. And the inherent nature of these models is to be somewhat random and probabilistic. And so you may get different answers depending on the model that you're using, depending on the input data sets. And so I don't know that you can ever eliminate or make them perfectly reliable, because in some sense they are an AI. And like, you know, you think about human beings, you know, you ask me a question, the likelihood that there's something unreliable in what I say is reasonably high if you talk to me, you know, for a long period of time, because I don't have perfect knowledge of the world. And in many cases, I don't even know what I don't know is right. And that's true as much for these models. The way in which you can improve them is, therefore, you know, you want to think about improvement, and you also want to think about use cases. Obviously, for like some use cases, you know, medical treatment or, you know, areas oriented around safety, you want those models to be very correct. And so you have to check every step of the process for building those models. What is the input documentation? What are the weights in which I'm processing? How does the model respond to certain questions? And you have to do a lot of testing in order to be able to deliver the fidelity that you're looking for. The other way in which you're able to, besides sort of in the right context and the right weights when you're developing the model, the other way in which you're able to improve these models is by feeding the right context at runtime. And so people talk a lot about prompt engineering and fine tuning. And that's a lot of where, you know, and RAG, and that's a lot of where Alation can help, because a lot of what we're able to feed to these models is additional context in order to make them more high fidelity and better. What does that mean? That means that, as an example, if you, Armin, are talking to a model and you're asking a question, we might be able to feed that model information about questions you've asked before, about which department you might exist in, where you might live. And having that context might allow the model to give you a much better response than if it didn't know those things. And so this, I think this area of fine tuning and RAG and prompt engineering, these areas are really early stage, and there's a lot more that we can do to even take the existing models and make them a lot more accurate and reliable. And this is, I think, a lot of where the exciting development and work is being done, in addition to model development itself.
Fantastic. So I'm going to change the gears a little bit at this point, and we have you on this podcast. That is a great opportunity for us as a you know, co-founder, as an entrepreneur, scaling the company to this size, you know, passing the milestone that many companies dream about to, you know, get over 100 million ARR and those kind of things. So I would like to ask you about, you know, when you look back and you look at the company and you say, this is really, we have been, you know, starting this company for maybe a little bit over 10 years, and we have reached to this milestone that is fantastic, and we are growing and even getting over, you know, and expanding more and more. And you had to just pinpoint maybe one, maybe two characteristics that helped you to really, from positioning, from messaging, from focus, from marketing, from fundraising, from team structure standpoint, from the market you positioned yourself, from the background that company had or DNA that you inherited from other places, you and your team to get there. What would be that one or two major characteristics that you would highlight? And you said, those are really important for us, and those were very helpful to get us where we are and, you know, impacting positively our success.
Yeah, I really believe in this idea. People talk a lot about sort of product market fit, but there's also this concept of entrepreneur market fit. And I think in the case of Alation, you know, there's some, like, what I'll call invariant qualities across all companies. Like, everybody needs to have tenacity and grit. If you're going to start a company, no matter what you do, there are always going to be problems. There's always going to be issues. There's always going to be new competitors. So yeah, you have to have those things. But I think in Alation's case, we built a category, which is this idea of a data catalog. And so that was our first product, and nobody had it before, and nobody knew what a data catalog was. And so we had to build and evangelize a category. And in building a new category, and, you know, it's almost like a baby. There's sort of, it can be anything, but you have to give it shape and you have to give it form. And so we needed a very collaborative team. And we needed a team that was sort of willing to learn from each other and that also had sort of directed ambition. And I think one of the characteristics of Alation that allowed us to really grow and learn in this space is having a lot of people who were able to work together and really support each other in a collaborative way. And I think that's far more important in a market where you're exploring and learning, maybe than a market where you're just basically segmenting and trying to do something very specific, but know what your execution plan happens to be. So that was a characteristic that mattered a lot for us because we had to collaborate with customers and determine what it is that we needed to build for them. We had to collaborate with each other and figure out what the boundaries of the category were. And so this idea of constant learning and iteration, especially where the problem was very gauzy, I think was a really important characteristic.
With regard to data catalog you mentioned, with regard to some of these topics that are very specialized at the moment, also the fact that you are serving some of these large enterprises, how do you feel about the future trend with regard to democratization? And do you think that will be democratized, the data catalog, the data management, all of these things in the future, so the mid-sized companies will start adopting and doing it more often, and maybe in the future, even smaller organizations or tools will have this embedded into their product. So it's just the default. It's just the way people really, the data culture that is being built, it comes with it, and people would realize that it's so important to really know about data and the data about data and data cataloging and all of those are so important, has to be started regardless of the size of the organization and needs to be in place the earlier rather than later. How do you feel about that? Because right now I think, if I'm correct, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that seems to be something that only, you know, large enterprise maybe is paying attention to.
Yeah. I'm going to take a sort of contrarian view maybe on this question, and maybe even contrarian to what I've believed in the past. But I think that this, you know, one would think that it's important to get data to every user at all points in time. But businesses and organizations obviously have goals, and there are reasons for them to make investments. And a lot of the time people want to do data democratization, and they think, okay, well, if I just like open up the data to everybody, then we are going to be in great shape and everything's going to just sort itself out and things are just going to work. But that's not always the case. And often some decisions are more valuable than other decisions, and some decision makers have more impact than other decision makers. And so democratization in and of itself is not necessarily useful. I mean, it's almost like, you know, if you had a whole bunch of people voting, but none of them had any knowledge about what they were voting on, then it would be probably not as useful of a democracy as a case where you have folks that are actually quite capable. And in that sense, I think that the value of the decisions and value of the data is often overlooked. People presume democracy is good in and of itself, but actually what really matters is the value and the outcomes from any of these decisions. And what I think distinguishes the best practitioners, the best companies, the most capable companies are the ones that are able to both democratize, but also measure the value and increase the value over time and steer their efforts towards guiding more resources to the data elements and the processes and the people who are producing the most value out of the data. And I think that's the thing that people often miss. People think, oh, data democratization, like let's just more data for more people, that in and of itself is good. It's good, but it's not sufficient.
Mm-hmm. And the other question, I'm going to get a little bit selfish here, ask a question that I have. Hopefully some others may appreciate that question as well. I'm an analytic guy, so I'm asking question to understand, you know, it's important to understand the analytics also on the data itself, right? So if you have this piece of data, you have this data catalog, then one of the questions might be, can you provide me some metrics on this data, on the usage of it? Maybe some metrics on how useful this piece of data is versus the other one, rather than just telling me that what this data is about, maybe a little bit more, just, you know, is it also part of what Alation is kind of offering today or expanding in the future?
It's a massive part of what we do, and I would argue one of the most valuable parts of what we do, because I think this idea of value is essentially born off of insight. Why did, you know, is this, you could work on two data projects at any given, you know, you're going to have finite resources. Which ones do I work on? How do I decide something is more valuable than another? Which projects are more useful? And so this idea of getting ROI out of your data and understanding the utility and understanding the measurability around your data initiatives and efforts, I think is at the heart of, you know, everything that we do and everything that we care about. And so that's certainly something that we think a lot about. And, you know, certainly is some of the most strategic capabilities that we provide to our customers. I mean, you can view all of these things very much as tools. Like you can sit there and do, I want to do data lineage better and data governance better and data, you know, mesh and data management. And, you know, you can get lost in the pea soup of all of these terms. But if you're not actually producing an outcome, or if you're not producing value, then all of this stuff is quite, you know, academic and irrelevant. And ultimately, people who are funding these projects and these functions won't fund you more unless you're able to prove some measurability and value.
One aspect that we have seen a lot as data is getting more important and data getting more specialized in a way in different domains. People who are working with data also, they are getting more specialized in different domains related to the data. And we have seen so many different specialties around data in the most, you know, in the last 10, 20 years. You can see it by just looking at the job titles, for example. Now, AI has started. And do you think, is it going to accelerate that specialization around data, or is it going to maybe decelerate it, maybe diffusing it, maybe letting people to just be a little bit more generalist? And AI will take care of those very details, and they don't need anymore to really be so specialized around it. So we may see the trend in the future that, you know, it's maybe not aligned with the trend we have seen so far about really diving deeper and deeper and deeper. And there are some people that just take one aspect of data or one way of data algorithms on, you know, different aspects of data science, data engineering, and just delve into it. How do you see the trend might be based on the AI impact?
I'm pretty optimistic on this vector for two reasons. I mean, I think that the general trend of AI will be to enable people more for two reasons. I think, first of all, in a world where you have these agents and you are getting answers out of these systems, the people who will be able to get the right answers out of the systems will do differentially better. So there will be returns to knowing how these models work, knowing how to get right answers, understanding science and reason and bias, and therefore using these models in a differentiated and better way. I think correspondingly, one of the biggest problems is that many of these models can be used to produce, or all of these models can be used to produce misinformation. And if misinformation is sort of one of the guiding characteristics of current day, current era, if we want to, you know, invest in this stuff and invest behind this stuff, then, you know, truth is going to have to largely win out over lack of information and lack of fact. And so I think that both to solve the problems that these technologies produce and also to capitalize best on what these technologies allow you to do as a human being, you're going to have to know this stuff, and you're going to have to understand science. You're going to have to understand, you know, reasoning and bias. And it, that I think will be, have to be a big part of the tools. And if it isn't, then I think those that are not producing that transparency, they are going to lose out over the long term. So my belief is that it's going to empower people more than it disempowers them, but time will tell.
Okay. I would like to ask you the last question, about really any publication, any podcast, any book that you may want to recommend that either personally you liked it or professionally you have seen it to be very impactful.
Well, so I'm a podcast host as well of a podcast called Data Radicals, and we talk a lot about these topics around data culture and AI and data management. So you can find it on Spotify and Apple Podcasts, but please tune into Data Radicals. And it's been a really fun process because, like you, I get to meet a whole bunch of people and just learn about the world orthogonally. So that's been great. Another podcast that I've actually been really listening to recently is one that's super popular called The Rest is History, which has been super fun. So they delve into all of these really interesting people who you have heard the name of, but don't necessarily know about. You know, they recently had a series on Lord Byron, who I knew nothing about, but has a fascinating backstory and history. And so that's been awesome to just sort of allow me to unwind and learn about the world around me. And you just realize how small you are in the context of an amazing history that we all have.
Fantastic. It was a pleasure speaking with you. Thank you very much for the discussion. I enjoyed it very much, and I hope others do too.
Thank you, Armin, for having me.
Thank you for listening to SaaS Scaled with Armin Ashraghi. For show notes and any resources mentioned in today's episode, go to sasscaled.com. If you're enjoying our show, give us a 5-star review and share on LinkedIn. And be sure to subscribe for any updates on future episodes. Thanks for listening. This episode is brought to you by Curve, the modern no-code analytics solution, the tools you need to take action with your data on a platform built for maximum scalability, security, and cost efficiencies. If you're ready to reduce complexity and dramatically lower costs, then contact us today at curvey.com. That's Q-R-V-E-Y.com.